Coming up on the Joyful Learning Podcast.
While in-person workshops are so amazing, when you attend these multi-day, multi-session workshops, you take notes and a lot of it gets forgotten or lost. And I just wanted a way to start to archive things for myself.
Today, I'm in conversation with a woman who has brought great joy to my life for the past 6 years, and also a lot of laughter. Barbara Johnson is a woman of many talents, and I'm going to read a short bio of her professional accolades, and then I'm going to have her tell us a little bit more about all of her side hustles. So Barbara Johnson is the most recent past president of CASEL. She was CASEL president from 2018 to 2021. She is currently the president of CECA. She was a 2018 Colchester Teacher of the Year. She was a 2018 Connecticut Teacher of the Year semifinalist. She won the Library Program of the Year from CASEL in 2016. She is currently the AASL, which is the American Association of School Librarians, Chapter Assembly Chair. In 2021, she won the CASEL Leadership Award, and she is on the present Commission for Educational Technology. So again, that's a long list just by itself, but that's not even the fun parts of Barbara. So Barbara, tell us a little bit more about your side hustles.
So I think the most unexpected thing, and I always tell this in when we play two truths and a lie with the students, I am an Uber driver. I've been driving for Uber, you know, strangers around for money for about 7 years. I did that after my back couldn't handle being a bartender anymore. I started working at the Outback in New London when it first opened in 2005. Just thinking of something that I could do that didn't involve children, not my children, not your children, nobody's children. So, alcohol plays a good part in that. And so I could, give people drinks. They always seemed to be happy to see me and, they left even happier. So bartending was great until I got too old to duck under the wood and then I would hit my head. So I started Uber driving because my children were then adults and I had this big mom car. And no kids to drive around. So strangers and money, that seems great. We're in a pretty good touristy area. So I do Uber driving when I get bored. During COVID, when there weren't any strangers to drive, I started building yard furniture because my backyard was a disaster. I discovered, as many people did during COVID, like you're just staring at the backyard from March of 2020 until still to this day. To build fun furniture, I found a couple of websites and YouTube, right? Everybody fell in love with YouTube, how to do things on YouTube and TikTok during COVID. So I started building lawn furniture and put a few pictures up of what we built for Mother's Day, May of 2020. And people were like, hey, can you build me one of those? And so I cannot tell you how many pieces of lawn furniture I've built. And I sew. So I started sewing when my girls were doing Irish dancing, which is an expensive sport, terrible psychologically on your children, but very, they need these costumes, crazy costumes with gems and embroidery. And so they're very expensive, embarrassingly expensive. I would not even want to tell you how much money we put into costumes and body glue and things like that. So I started to learn how to sew these elaborate costumes and do some embroidery. And then people saw the dresses I was making for my girls and skirts. And so I started selling those. And I still get a picture every once in a while through my social media feed of a dress that's been resold or handed down. I think that's...
I think DJing.
Oh yeah, there's DJing.
Has been brought up.
Yep, I've DJed a wedding. Check that off my bucket list. That was very high stress. I DJed a wedding. Oh, and I make beer and wine.
I was going to say,
I make my own alcohol. Yeah. Like some people started making bread during COVID. No, I made alcohol. So again, I don't have to worry about your kids, my kids, nobody's kids.
Yeah. One of the many reasons Barbara and I are kindred spirits.
Yes, wine.
So to go back a little bit of how we met, I always laugh at the story the first time I remember meeting you was probably back in 2016. It was at the Castle on Conference. I was a second year librarian, very new, but very enthusiastic. You came up to me and you said, I am the president, I think at the time, right? You were president, kind of stepped into that role unexpectedly early.
Yes.
And you said you're looking for a VP intern. And would you want to do this, Melissa? And sure, okay. And I really didn't think that eventually that would lead me to have to be president. I didn't think through very well. But I'm so glad that I said yes, because the last however many years, 6 years, has been lots of fun adventures, lots of learning, lots of connections with people. And you definitely, like I said, bring me a lot of joy in my life. So,
well, thank you. I enjoy, I don't see myself as spreading joy. I just see myself as having a good time and surrounding myself with people who I can share that joy and kind of common interests and tasks. And interestingly enough, I think that Unconference was the year that we had the speaker that said, it's easy to say no, it's harder to say yes, but. And so that was, you know, I am a firm believer in, you know, my librarian job is to say yes, even though I might not know how or when how or why how. My job is to find out how and why and when and get back to people. So it is easier just to say no, to stay like within your comfort zone. But how many things do we miss by saying no? And
or
many...
yes, but like you said, yeah. So, and I don't think it was at first year, because I think I was helping plan the Unconference because we had Christina Holzweiss.
Right.
She was the speaker. If
said yes, but.
I think yes and.
Yes and.
Because it just.
Sorry, I get my butts and ands mixed up.
We'll confirm the official phrase, but I definitely associate that with Christina.
Yeah,
and sure. I do remember having sort of a shift in my thinking after listening to her talk about that, because I hadn't really considered the difference in the language, you know, when you, and just that idea that yes, we have to say yes, and it might not be the way that the person asking us is thinking it's going to come out, but we just want to be very open and welcoming in our buildings all the time as librarians.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was when actually Christina and I first kind of touched base, I think in 15 or 16, those same years. I just had this bird brain idea of getting just a whole bunch of makers together with the same kind of thought process and in the maker meetup. And I said to her, I Facebook messaged and tweeted to quite a few just names in the field nationally. I wasn't even acquainted with them. They didn't know who I was. I was just this person from Connecticut. And I said, hey, if we had just this meeting where everybody just got together and kind of shared their ideas, like this power lunch, but there'd be lunch because food's important, but then there'd be things to do also, like your passions, everybody shares their passion. And she said, absolutely, she would come. And so that's what kind of started the whole maker meetup thing, which started, I think, in 2015. We had our first meetup in the summer on Long Island. And then we brought it back to Connecticut, and just different topics. Some were high tech, some were low tech, but just, and games, and just different ways to share your passions. And again, share your joy and make those professional and personal connections, because so often what started out as just a professional connection of, or a collaboration or a piece of knowledge being shared has quite quickly developed into a personal relationship where, you know, we go out and we hang out or we talk about personal. I mean, things get really personal really quickly, which is a great thing, because your professional network, especially in the last few years, has really become your personal connection and your personal support system. So
that, I'm so glad you said that, because I think that is definitely one of the things that I want to convey through this podcast in every episode, is I want to bring people who have made an impact on me in some way professionally and personally and share that with others and encourage them to connect with one another, but also with just the people that you have in your vicinity too. So I'm glad you said that. Something else that I am always inspired by are like your ideas. You've already shared a few that I didn't even think to ask you about, the Maker Meetup being one of them, and I've attended. It's so much fun, and we need to bring that back.
Yeah, we're bringing it back.
Okay.
Maybe next summer.
Oh, yes.
I was busy this summer.
Yes.
Maybe next summer.
Yeah. I think we should.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I want people to know about with this episode is your hashtag Try This on Monday. And when Carrie and I were starting to brainstorm some of our ideas for what we would want our first season to include, you immediately came up as a person. And also this idea of whatever we share on the podcast, we want people to be able to go and try this on Monday. And I am current president of Castle. So we have worked together as an exec board to really offer people high quality, both informal and formal PD regularly. And that all came from you to start with. And you brought that to Castle when you came to Castle. So could you tell us a little bit more about the hashtag Try This on Monday?
Yeah, so this just started as my own personal digital archive, knowing that hashtags are searchable. And as I was going through librarian school and in 2013, 2014, you know, information and professional development comes so fast and furious. While in-person workshops are so amazing, when you attend these multi-day, multi-session workshops, you take notes and a lot of it gets forgotten or lost. And I just wanted a way to start to archive things for myself in my brain and, you know, through my digital connections. So I did my research and there were a few things archived or tweeted to the hashtag Try This on Monday. And so I just started retweeting or sharing things with the hashtag Try This on Monday for my own personal experience. You can just go Google search Try This on Monday and you will find an archive of everything I want to try, but maybe don't have time to try or didn't write down. And so it just gives me a running record of things I'd like to try. More importantly, they're really just quick and simple things. They're not total changes in philosophy. They're not tools where you have to go take some courses and get certified, or that you could. Most of them are just really quick things that you can watch a quick video, read a quick article, check a quick privacy policy, and you could use this for your own personal benefit, your own creativity, with students, share with staff. It could be things I want to read, things I want to do, places I want to visit. But you can start archiving this. We can crowdsource to the Try This on Monday. But I think the joy in it and the beauty in it is that it's simple things. I can share, like go register for this multi-day conference. I don't know that I would necessarily, you know, tweet that or archive that to the Try This on Monday. However, if someone's coming out with a new digital tool, or they changed or they added something to Flip, or there was announcement that, you know, something happened in green screen, I might, you know, archive that to the Try This on Monday as well.
Yeah. So definitely listeners, go and search that hashtag. It's both available via Facebook and via Twitter.
There's lots of crazy YouTube videos there too that I tried to do myself. And
Barbara's
I'm a
not
a believer. Yeah. Like I know, like we said before, you guys are doing a lot of post-production and stuff and I just like do it. What you get.
Let it fly.
Yeah. Just let it fly. Let it just throw it out there. And if people watch it or listen to it, that's it.
Well, I think that's really good advice for everybody is don't be so afraid it's not going to be perfect or it's not going to be what you envisioned it to be that you don't do it. I mean, that is something that I've definitely learned over the years. And Carrie and I work on that. And we try to convince each other that it doesn't have to be perfect because we're going to make an impact in some way. So, and even if we don't, it's joyful for us. This process has been one of the most fun things that has happened for the last year when things have been so stressful and everything seems heavy and it just seems hard. And this has been fun. So that is also something I've taken away from the beginning of this experience. One of the things that I wanted to make some connection with is some of the challenges that we as librarians and a country have been seeing happen more and more frequently. And it has to do with book challenges and censorship. And you have been pretty involved in different areas in this topic, both as the president, as a past president, and then just in your role as ALA, the person, or tell me again what is your role in ALA? You are the
So I'm in chapter. AASL, Chapter Assembly Chair.
Thank you.
And I've gotten involved at ALA in some membership committees and things like that. So I am kind of, I do want to stay involved in these conversations to bring it back to Connecticut.
Yeah. And I've participated in various town halls or affinity groups, and just to hear some of the stories that librarians share, it just makes me, I don't even have words for how it makes me feel, because of everything, it's very stressful. And for us to be able to have that network and to have them be able to share and for us to understand, I think is important. But now what do? We can't just listen and empathize or sympathize. We have to take some types of action wherever we are in our current position. So this week, I believe the week that we are going to be airing this, it's going to be Banned Book Week, if everything works according to plan. And on Monday, we should have had through CASEL a Try This on Monday, and we'll have a conversation about what's going on within our libraries. And Amanda Jones is going to be one of the people that's going to be part of this conversation. There might be a few others that we get it to attend with us, but for the listeners, go to the CASEL website, ctcasel.org, and it should be archived and available for everybody to view for a certain amount of time. But tell us, Barbara, a little bit about some of the things you've experienced, you've seen. I know that you've done some interviews. So what is your best advice for people who are listening that might be dealing with some of these situations personally right now?
Yeah, so the world of librarianship can feel very isolating from the beginning. Usually you're the only librarian in your building. I know some high schools have a couple, but when someone challenges your professional opinion, or so much passion and work goes into building a library collection, and it becomes very personal, even though we try and leave, I mean, you're leaving your personal beliefs out of it, because that's a censorship in itself. You work so hard to make sure that your collection represents all of your patrons, all of their beliefs, all of their questions, all of their faces, everything they identify with and who they are, that when someone walks into your library and questions a piece of that collection, it can raise a lot of doubts in your own. Did you do your job? Did you do it correctly? But it can feel very isolating. And so my best advice is, you for sure are not in this alone. Just by turning on the 5 o'clock news on any given day or opening up your social media feed, you will see librarians fighting for their stakeholders every single day, fighting for the faces that come through their doors, to make sure that they have materials that are represented, to make sure that they have doors and windows and covers of books and main characters that represent all of their readers. The fact that there are policies being put in place from Tennessee to Texas to Louisiana, Pennsylvania.
Don't forget Florida.
Florida, and the Midwest, that they want transparency. Violates the library's Bill of Rights, right? That I can have a reading list of my own, and then it's private of my own. And we're making laws and that our library management systems are even considering putting in portals for parents or other readers to be monitoring what students are reading. And I'm not afraid to defend my collection, and you should not be either. You should not be worried that a book is going to be challenged. You should be up to date. So another piece of advice, make sure you know what the policy is when materials are being reconsidered. And I'd like to reconsider the name of Banned Book Week to be, you know, like a challenged book week, because not all books have been banned, but as soon as they are brought up as challenged, it puts them on the radar of books that should be banned. And so we can't even just look at the books that have successfully been banned. We need to really consider all the books that have just been challenged. Advice, if you're facing a challenge, not to know you're not alone, to reach out to any professional network. ALA has an amazing support system in the Office of Intellectual Freedom. They may not get back to you right away, because again, you are not alone. We are going through thousands of these material challenges. It's going beyond books in a library to classroom libraries and looking for teachers to make lists of what's in their classrooms, any materials used for learning, databases being selected for schools to use with their curriculum, state supplied databases that the state libraries are selecting. Let them look at it. Of course, let them look at, we are wide open. However, a material cannot be challenged because it's not appropriate for someone's family. It's just that it's just appropriate not for your family. We shouldn't challenge a material for everyone's family because there is someone's family who that book or that database or that picture is meant for, and someone who does need to look at that or read that.
One of the things that I know we were telling people early on is if you do experience a challenge in your system, to report it, to go to the ALA Office of Intellectual Freedom's website. We'll put the link in the show notes and just let them know it's happening, because we want accurate statistics. And the statistics we have, we know that's not even close to everything that's happened, because people sometimes and often don't know what to do outside of their system. They're so busy fighting in the here and now. So, and I think just that network, really develop your network and reach out to your state organization if you are not part of it already. And hopefully you'll find some support that can get you through the really tough part. And one last thing that I don't want to talk about a lot, but I just saw it this morning on a social media feed. There's a memorandum from the Florida Department of Education, and the subject is, it's House Bill 1467, Call for Parent Work Group Members to Develop Online Training Program for School Library Media. And this is really scary, and I don't know a lot about it, so I'm not going to talk a lot about it, but just on the surface, when you're asking people who don't have the training to create a course that trained professionals are going to be required to take every year, that's a huge red flag. So my other piece of advice is to really tune in to what is going on. Try to not put your head in the sand, even though it's really very stressful, but know what's going on in your local community and beyond, just so that you can speak about it intelligently if it comes up. And attend board meetings in the town in which you live. Be an active participant and be positive and happy about what, share what you are happy about with the libraries and the collections, because we often hear from the people who are unhappy, and that is the only mic space that is filled. So if you are satisfied and happy about having the access to the books and the freedom to read, really get out and support in your local school districts.
Yeah, and mostly you're hearing from districts that have librarians and strong school library professional organizations. My fear is we are not hearing from those districts who don't have librarians, who don't have a strong support system for their educators to know you don't have to just pull that book off the shelf. Your principal can't just walk into your classroom and say, these all now go away. There are support systems, there are reporting mechanisms. We want educators everywhere to know that you don't have to ask. If you don't have librarians in your district, you could go to the district next door, or go to the library, the school library association, or the public library association in your state. And even if you're not a librarian, they're going to support you, because if you're curating information, if you're finding answers, if you're getting books for kids, you are a curator and a spreader of reading joy. And so you need to make sure that everyone in your classroom, everyone in your school, everyone in your district understands that if you don't have certified librarians, you do have places you can go to develop these lists, to gain support, and to get the momentum out there to support the materials you have in your classrooms and your school.
All right. So kind of to wrap up, we're going to end it on a positive note. And one question that I am hoping to ask each guest is, what has been bringing you joy this summer?
Bringing me joy this summer. We've been camping a lot this summer. I've been doing some upgrades to my camper. So I put some rolling shelves in, and don't tell them this, but all my children have left my house this summer, which is bringing me great joy because they are all very successful and doing well on their own. But when I come in the door in the afternoon, my house looks exactly like when I left it in the morning. I went away for three days. There was not one pile of shoes, not a pile of clothes, no dishes in the sink. It was amazing. It's an amazing feeling. It can be a little, you know, melancholy. You know, the kids are all grown. They don't need me anymore. But it's great joy. The kids are all grown and they don't need you anymore. You should say it like that.
That is fabulous. Yes. And I won't tell them. I promise. Last question. Is there anything we did not cover that you would like to add?
Don't forget, everyone should be archiving stuff to the Try This On Monday. And if you ever just want, we're just curious as to what happens inside Barbara Johnson's brain, just search for the hashtag Try This On Monday. Just put it in a Google search. Really weird things will come up because you never know what I want to try on a Monday morning. And my teaching partner, Kim Hebb, also appreciates that Monday mornings can be a bit dicey because you never know what's going to happen.
Well, and where can our listeners find you on social media and beyond?
Oh, yeah, so I'm at Techno Johnson on Twitter, and I just changed my Instagram to Techno_Johnson because it assigned me some random number I could never remember. So Instagram, Jack Jactor Library on Facebook, Mother of Four, other places. I don't know. I'm everywhere. Just Google search me. Barbara Johnson, the librarian. Barbara Johnson, the author, is dead. I'm not her. There's another.
Okay.
There's several
okay.
Barbara Johnsons. I'm the living one. So that's me.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Barbara Johnson. She never disappoints and is always good for some great laughs and also some really vital and important information on a variety of topics. One of the things that she mentioned that I wanted to speak a little bit more about was in relation to books. She mentioned that all readers need and deserve mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors. And this comes from an article that was written in 1990 by Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop when she was at Ohio State University. The article is also called Windows, Mirrors, and Sliding Glass Doors and can be found in the link in the show notes. One of the parts that I wanted to share as a wrap-up is the very first paragraph of her essay. It says, books are sometimes windows, offering views of worlds that may be real or imagined, familiar or strange. These windows are also sliding glass doors, and readers have only to walk through an imagination to become part of whatever world has been created or recreated by the author. When lighting conditions are just right, however, a window can also be a mirror. Literature transforms human experience and reflects it back to us. And in that reflection, we can see our own lives and experiences as part of the larger human experience. Reading, then, becomes a means of self-affirmation, and readers often seek their mirrors in books. And there is a lot more to this article, so I highly recommend all of the listeners read it if they have not yet read it. And it really speaks to the importance that all children deserve all three of these views with books. So please, all the librarians and the teachers and the parents who are out there listening, please do your best to continue to encourage readers and really promote the freedom to read and to choose, and to always be thinking about what experiences are being shared as well as what experiences are not being shared. And I hope that all of you are looking forward to next podcast episode coming in 2 weeks. We are very excited to share the conversation that I had back in July with the author Jo Hackle. And she is going to be talking both about her middle grade novel, Smack Dab in the Middle of Maybe, as well as the power and joy of nature. I hope you join us.